Welcome to The Odyssey, a podcast by and about Mesa County Libraries. My name is Bethany.
And I'm David. This segment is brought to you by CultureFest, an annual library event which focuses on cultures represented in the Grand Valley via performances, tables with food samples, and cultural beauty from around the world. Come check out the diversity in our valley. Today we're talking with Ike, a librarian at Mesa County Libraries, about ghost towns in Mesa County. Sounds spooky, Ike. What's going on with those?
You know, I think that the ghost towns of Mesa County, you know, there are not a lot of them, but I've always been a big fan of local history, and the ghost towns that we have here, I think, are really fascinating reminders of the history, you know, places you can actually go and see and then get an idea of what those people lived like, you know, what their lives were like, and just it puts some things in context.
And just because they're called ghost towns, there's not actually ghosts there, right? That's
correct. I mean, if you did enough looking around, you might find ghosts, but I have not seen any.
Okay. Just clarify.
Right. Okay. So we're talking about Mesa County ghost towns, and you have studied this a lot as somebody who works in the regional history room at the library.
Yeah, I've studied them, you know, some of it related to work, and also, you know, just as a personal interest, you know, a hobby of mine.
Okay. So let's start off with the basics. What is a ghost town?
So a ghost town is, you know, it would be evidence of, you know, buildings of a former place or site where people had lived, that's really abandoned for the most part.
Okay. So it's an actual collection of buildings that are abandoned or a site that's been abandoned.
Mm-hmm. And okay. Some people might, depending on who you talk to, some people might consider, you know, a building to be a ghost town or several buildings to be a ghost town. It depends on, I mean, I don't know if there's a true definition in that regard.
Okay. So in Mesa County, there's several, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Let's jump into one. What's the first one we want to talk about?
So the first one that I'd like to talk about is Calamity Camp. And it was an old uranium, actually radium, vanadium, and uranium mining camp.
Up on the freestyle. Yeah.
it was located, I know it is sort of a weird name, but it's located up on the Uncompahgre National Forest. Actually just outside of the National Forest.
Okay. So was there just like chaos going there all the time? Like Calamity Camp to me sounds just like it was an unorganized, total Western mess.
So it's interesting because it's located on Calamity Mesa, and there's also a nearby Calamity Creek. What I've read in an old newspaper article is that it got its name from a miner or worker at that camp whose donkey or mule had ate a bunch of his food.
Oh my gosh.
And that they weren't going to have the next shipment of food for, you know, 2 weeks or so. That's what I've read.
So it's like a literal disaster that the town is named after. I wonder how they recruited people to come live there. Like, come live in our disaster town. Like, that's not a great sales pitch, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's the Calamity Mesa part and then also Calamity Creek. So, but I mean, to me, the story about the donkey eating the food is more interesting.
I prefer that one.
Right. Okay, so that's on Calamity Mesa.
Yep.
Which is a BLM site, so you can actually go and visit this,
right? It is. Okay. It is. It's on BLM land. And the cool thing about Calamity Camp is it's on that National Register of Historic Places. And so you can find a lot of information online. There are some books that talk about Calamity Camp to a certain extent. In fact, some really interesting books. But because it's on that National Register, it's fairly easy to find if you wanted to visit it. It's not... I would definitely want to do my research before going out there, but it can be, you know, fairly easy to get to.
Okay.
The BLM also notes on their website that there's some residual radiation because of radioactive minerals. Ooh. So
you'll see as you go to Calamity Camp and also to another nearby mining camp, there are big yellow signs basically saying that, you know, what you just mentioned, Bethany, and that, you know, you might be entering these historic mining workings and that there could be potential health hazards.
It's kind of scary.
That is a little scary. But then again, Mesa County has a huge history in mining,
exactly.
Specifically uranium.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this whole town is probably poisoned, right?
With uranium.
you hear about that from time to time.
So Calamity Camp is a ghost town that we're talking about today on the show. How active was this town? Was it was pretty bustling?
Very active, going back to the early 1900s. You know, and with the mining, with the, you know, the those three different types of mining they were doing as far as the radium, vanadium, and uranium, there were slowdowns. I mean, there were times where there was a lot of activity, and then there were times where it would slow down depending on how much need there was for the ore. The big uranium boom was in the 50s, though.
Okay.
The Atomic Energy Commission started the Domestic Uranium Procurement Program, and that guaranteed prices for uranium. So a company knew that if they were going to start mining, they could sell that uranium for a certain price. And that drove a lot of that boom. It wasn't the only reason, but it was one of the primary reasons.
Okay.
And so when did this town actually vacate and become a ghost town?
You know, as far as I read, that probably would have been the 60s, maybe early 70s. But really by the 70s, things had slowed down so much. There is another nearby smaller camp that was in operation in the 70s, but things had really dragged down quite a bit by that point.
So people just up and leave because it was mostly miners who lived there, right?
Yep.
So if there's no jobs, they just up and left.
Exactly. Yep.
So along with Calamity Camp, we also have Carpenter.
There's Carpenter.
Right. And,
Climax Camp too also. Yep. Right.
Okay. Well, let's talk about those other two ghost towns. Let's start with Carpenter.
So Carpenter was an old coal mining town located north of Grand Junction. And what's really interesting about Carpenter, I think, is you have the town, this mining town, but then you had this railroad called the Little Buccleuch Railway. And it would actually take you from the town, which is, you know, quite a ways north of Grand Junction, all the way down to First Street.
Wow.
Which I think is pretty cool. It really ties in Grand Junction and Carpenter.
How long was that railway operational?
It was, so the town of Carpenter was founded in 1890. As far as the operational time frame, I would bet around that time, I don't have that exact number, but it would have gone until when those mines pretty much all closed up in the 1920s.
Makes sense.
And what's interesting is that even back to the 70s, you could see parts of the old railroad north of town. So you could be walking along and see this old railroad, these tracks going back, you know, 100 some odd years.
So if you're in downtown Grand Junction looking towards the Buccleuchs, it would be past the airport?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly.
So Carpenter Mine, in the notes that you provided us, you said there are only 50 people that live there at a time.
I think that it was around that number.
Okay, that's a pretty small town.
Yeah, and I mean, it was comparing, you know, Carpenter to Grand Junction at that time. You know, Grand Junction was pretty rustic, but Carpenter was as well.
And I saw that it was William Thomas Carpenter who brought this about.
Yep.
And he really wanted it to be like Glenwood Springs.
Yeah.
And so that's where they got the name of Poland Spring after a resort in Maine.
Yep.
But it obviously didn't work out too well.
Yeah. And in fact, there was at one point sort of a debate as far as whether Carpenter would take off or Grand Junction. Obviously, we know the case in 2019, which town took off, but it was interesting that it was being promoted. The town of Carpenter was being promoted as like this next destination. I think maybe the access to the river made Grand Junction a more viable option as far as really developing it. But it's interesting that there was that debate way back then and obviously what we know today.
Yeah. And there also used to be a water bottling company up there as well.
Yeah. So there's a spring way up above Carpenter when they actually bottled that water as sort of a medicinal product.
Interesting. Wonder if you can still do that today.
I don't know. Go try. Who's going to stop you?
Buccleuch medicinal water.
So we talked about a couple ghost towns. If I wanted to go out there and visit a ghost town, maybe Carpenter or Calamity Camp, what should I expect to see?
You know, you're going to see buildings, remains of structures that are in varying levels of decay. You know, because in some cases, these buildings have been around for well over 100 years. you know, you might see equipment that's left out there, but it's primarily going to be the buildings and foundations.
Okay, so there's not like a full-on main street that's just totally abandoned.
Yeah, those they were so rural, and then in a lot of cases it was just like maybe a couple, five buildings. And in a lot of cases with, you know, like a place like Carpenter, there really isn't, there are structures remaining or ruins remaining, but there's really not, if you were to compare what's there now with what was there back in its heyday, it's not much at all, but it's, I still find it really interesting.
Sure. Yeah. And we should remind people, these are both mining sites. Mm-hmm. So if you are visiting them, there is some inherent danger there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So be careful to where you're exploring.
Definitely. Yeah. And keep in mind that if you are going to, you know, going into buildings, you know, keep in mind that these buildings in some cases have been around for a very, very long time. And you just don't know what, you know, as far as the structural integrity, you don't know what you might be getting yourself into.
Sure.
Yeah, I actually saw when I was researching about Carpenter that three Grand Junction teenagers actually died mm-hmm. in 1989 when they suffocated in a mine. So they permanently sealed the mines after that in Carpenter. Mm-hmm. So just be very careful.
Yeah, definitely. And I remember I grew up in Grand Junction. I remember as a kid hearing about that on the news stations is just like so scary. Mm. And, you know, that really prompted a lot of those closures of those mines. They didn't want anyone else to go into those, just knowing the potential health hazards.
Definitely.
So just one more quick question for you, Ike. I know you do a lot of work in the regional history room. Mm-hmm. Are there any books about these sites, maybe some picture catalogs that people can look at and kind of see what was going on in those sites before they plan a visit?
That's a great question. As far as Carpenter goes, there's a really great book called The Little Bookcliff Railway by Lyndon Lampert and Robert McLeod. It is a fascinating chronicle of the development of those mines, the town, everything about it. And it's not just Carpenter, it's also the development of early Grand Junction. I really think, in my opinion, I think that it's probably one of the best local history books about the Grand Valley that exists.
Ooh. Some high praise.
That is high praise.
In my opinion.
Highly valued, Ike. Highly valued.
Yeah, well, you definitely spend more time in there than I do. So yes.
And there's
I'll
also
trust you on that.
Is another one I wanted to mention. It's not a book, but there's a report that a Utah State University student wrote. It was a thesis-type report on Calamity Camp, and it's called Mining the Colorado Plateau, the Story of Calamity Camp from 1910 to 1919. And one of the reasons that report was written was that it was in preparation for it to be added to that National Register of Historic Places. And it just gives you, you know, the writer went through and did these really interesting interviews with some of the people who had lived up there in mind. And just a very, you know, it's like you're reading it, it's giving you an idea of what it would have been like to live up there. It's just really giving you a first person, you know, narrative, and you're out in the middle of this very remote place. And it's so cool to be able to read about it. And wow, it's like, wow, this is what it was like for those people to live.
I've got a final question for you, Ike. Mm-hmm. If you could choose any one of these locations where you could restore it and live there, which one would you choose?
That's a good question. You know, Carpenter's closer to Grand Junction. If you want to get groceries, that would be easier. but I would say as far as the setting, I would say Calamity Camp. You know, it's there are more trees around, more foliage. You know, nothing against the setting of Carpenter, but I just find Calamity Camp, Calamity Mesa to be a better place to live.
Okay.
Keeping in mind that you're, you know, out there in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So I'd want to make sure that I have plenty of supplies and whatnot.
No electricity, no mm-hmm. running water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you could get a solar farm, that would be optimal.
That's true. Good idea.
Well, there you go. You heard it from Ike. If you can get a solar farm at Calamity Camp, it's the place to be.
Drill a well and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
Forget about water. That's not important. Well, thanks, Ike. Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate the information. If you are listening and you want more information about this, definitely visit the Central Library. The Regional History Room in the lower level is an awesome place. Ike's down there a lot doing a lot of great work.
Also watch out for events. Ike holds lots of talks about different histories of Mesa County and just Colorado in general. So watch out for those also.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks.
This segment was brought to you by the Palisade Branch. The Palisade Branch is located in beautiful downtown Palisade. Make sure to stop by and visit because there is more to Palisade than peaches.
Today we're speaking with Noel, who's a librarian at Mesa County Libraries, and we're going to be learning about the Oral History Project. Noel, how's it going?
I'm good.
Welcome good. On.
Yeah, thananks for joining us.
Thanks.
So jumping right out of the gate, the Oral History Project is something that exists in our online catalog, and it's really an oral history of Mesa County and the western slope of Colorado, right?
Yeah, so the Mesa County Oral History Project was started in like the mid-70s, I think 76, and it was really a project at the museum and the library to find these stories of pioneers that were dying, and they wanted to get their stories before they passed on, so they got to their kids and them and recorded their stories.
How did the library get involved in the project?
I think it was basically the museum was looking for partners, and so the librarians stepped into that and, you know, stored the tapes and volunteered. The librarians volunteered at that time as interviewers. And so we kind of were the access part in the museum. More actively was like the archival part. So they stored the master tapes and stuff like that.
Right. So they were actually out there interviewing original founders, people who were related to founders, talking about the origins of Grand Junction, Mesa County, things of that nature?
Yeah, so they talked about ranching history. So there was a big ranching history on Glade Park, for instance. John Otto, who was, you know, kind of the smart old kook who got the monument founded as as the Colorado National Monument. Downtown Grand Junction stores, Colorado Avenue and its colorful history. So a lot of things that were interesting at the time.
That's great. And how did you get involved in this project?
Yeah, I learned that we had been a repository of the tapes until the renovation, which was most recent renovation.
2013 is when it ended.
Okay. And that we had given all the tapes back, and I thought, you know, that I would like to reinitiate this partnership with the museum. So I asked my supervisor and the museum if we something we could continue, you know, but bring it up to the 21st century and digitize these old oral histories. And so they said that, yeah, definitely that's something we could do.
Right.
What does digitizing include? What do you have to do with these old interviews?
Well, so I'm taking the tapes, and Adam, our sound guy right now, he helped me a lot with making sure the tapes were quality, you know, like the sound was quality and how to do that, noise reduction and stuff like that. So essentially transferring the tape into a digital format and making it accessible online. And then there's a lot of stuff that goes along with describing the interview so that people can keyword search.
And you also have volunteers working on creating transcripts of those, right?
Yeah, looking through transcripts for information and typing in old transcripts or putting the transcripts into the catalog. So yeah, we have volunteers and staff that work on that with me. So
yeah. Yeah, that's great. The library does a lot of work with local history. We've talked about the regional history room a bunch. As you've gone through these tapes, what stands out? Like, what's interesting about them?
Well, I mean, I like a lot of the information about homemakers and all the things that they had to do, like churning butter or, running a small garden, caring for five or six kids and all the things that they did. The history of Colorado Avenue is interesting. You know, it was saloons and prostitution for most of its history until 40s or 50s, I think, when they finally got it cleaned up.
I was going to say until 2018. Yeah,
until yesterday.
I read a really interesting one when I was working on the Oral History Project of a man, and he went undercover as a rancher. I can't remember his name.
I can't remember his name either. But
but that was a really interesting one because he went undercover and he was to track cattle that people were stealing or something. It was super cool.
People were stealing, whites essentially were stealing cattle from the government-run herd of, I want to say, the Crow Indians up in Montana.
Yes, that's what it was.
And so he was up there during the Depression, got that job there, finished his degree, and then he came here and became one of the best doctors in the area and kind of pioneered vaccines. But another thing that I might think of is the Copico Ranch and Dance Hall.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day, apparently had some very rowdy dances, and people would come from all over to play there. People would come from all over to listen and dance, even from New Mexico, from southeastern Colorado, Utah. And it was a pretty rowdy place. It started as a pear growing operation, and the guy who owned the fair store, along with Moyer, Elmer Craven, owned this kind of palatial place out toward Fruita, which, interestingly, when I was a kid, I didn't know all the history of this. You know, there was supposedly this barn out by Fruita where my friends would be like, whoa, dude, I went there, and there was like pig's blood everywhere, and there was satanic ritual, you could tell. And
I know exactly what you're talking about. It's, we had the same rumor, and we always refer to it as the Hell House.
The Hell House.
What? Yeah.
Yeah. Out by Fruita, right?
Right. It was out in Fruita, and it was like allegedly like a satanic hangout spot. Like, yeah. People would go out there and just do very mysterious things.
How have I never heard of this before?
And, you know, so I had friends that thought the same thing. I never went there. I was asking Ike about it just a little while ago. And he was saying, oh, yeah, that was the old Craven place, Copico. And they always described it as being in the barn, which I believe was probably the same as what was Elmer Craven's pear barn. And then after he passed in 1917, they moved off the property and his wife came into town. And I think they probably sold it. And then, I don't know her name, but the woman who bought it turned it into the Copico Dance Hall. Kept the Copico, which had been like the moniker for his pear operation, and became known as a dance hall. And, you know, there's a old cowboy, Morgan Goss, who talks about going there back in the day and getting in fist fights and fighting the guys from Utah or fighting the guys from Glade Park. And
full-time Western saloon out there.
And apparently people would go in, and they didn't sell alcohol, but you could dance, and then they would take a break around 11 and everybody go out and drink and then go in for more. And it would just last all night. And the woman's son, the woman who ran it, she brought her son from San Quentin Prison. His name was Vern Bubble Sadler, and he had two accomplices. They came out, and she was able to get them released into the custody of a Charlie Lumley, who was the sheriff here at the time. They ended up running the place, and then a while later, shooting and killing a guy named J.W. Big Kid Eames, who ran the gambling hall on Main Street. A gambling hall. There were more than one, called the Biltmore, and everybody really liked him, even the cops. And this was a policeman, a policeman's interview. I can't remember his name. Fritz Becker, who talks about the shooting of Big Kid Eames. And so these three were implicated in that shooting and went to prison for a little while until the mom gave some money to the governor, and then they were released.
My goodness. They should make this into a movie.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the Copico Dance Hall. And I thought that was kind of a fascinating story.
Yeah, I love that story. We've talked about it before. And actually, the family that was associated with that opened up a coffee shop in town now called Copica. So it's interesting that these families are still here, even though this history is, you know, not ancient, but it's fairly old history. Yeah. But it's still so close to people that are still in this town today.
Yeah, it is interesting. I've only been to Copico once, and I talked to them a little bit about it, and I think they must be related to the Cravens, the pear people. I'm guessing they're not related to the
criminals.
They seem pretty nice, but I don't know.
But
who knows if they're into criminal activity? Yeah. No, they definitely are not. I want to get that. that's just one of the stories that you can find in the Oral History Collection. Again, all these are available to download and listen to via our website, correct?
Well, you can't download them. You can listen to them online.
Or stream them, sorry.
Yeah, you can stream them. So, you know, because of restrictions and you can't download them, but you can listen to them there. You can look at a lot of the transcripts, not every transcript, but, and, you know, of course, it's just one of the oral history projects we have. So we have the Mesa County Oral History Project, which is what I work on, and then we have Veterans Remember.
It's so amazing to think about. Like, I think a lot of people think Mesa County is just a sleepy little forgotten area where nothing cool or interesting has ever happened. But then you've got this great story about Copica. You told me another story about a man whose sole job was to go onto Glade Park and trap all the wolverines and badgers off that site.
which blew my mind as well. And I don't remember his name either. You can find it in the oral history collection. There's lots of great ranching history around here, lots of mining stuff. There's so many different stories and so many things you can explore about the county. And the Oral History Project is a great place to start for some of that information.
Yeah. And if you're interested in subjects, like a subject such as ranching specifically, you can search the local digital archive by subject, right?
Yeah, so you could type in ranching and you would get a ton of stuff, you know, not just from us, but from other libraries around our Marmot consortium, so Eagle Valley and, you know, places all over the state, really. You can limit to Mesa County Oral History Project, but yeah, you're going to find a lot of stuff on ranching, homemaking, I mentioned, farming. What's something that doesn't sound so hayseed?
Saloons.
Gambling
clubs.
Yeah.
Murder.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's so interesting. There's, you know, as downtown becomes redeveloped, people are discovering those old prohibition tunnels that have been under the street. So I would imagine that there would be some information about that somewhere buried in this project.
Probably. I heard about that. And I remember rumors when I was a kid that just like Denver, you know, where you could go from
right.
Capitol Hill down to the red light district on Market Street, that there was something like that from here.
But yeah, I know the train station renovation, they discovered a tunnel there. I think there was another one underneath where the Nepal restaurant is on Main Street, the Reed Building.
Oh, yeah.
I think there was an illegal gambling club on the second floor.
Wasn't that the Biltmore?
That was the Biltmore.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Big Kid Eames ran.
Yeah, so there are all these little mysteries in Grand Junction that are worth solving.
We're not just a farming town.
Right. So, Noel, I wanted to talk to you. We're talking about tapes that have previously been recorded. Is this something that we're actively doing as well? Are you out there looking for new stories to record?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I've recorded two new ones.
Okay.
I would say right now that we have a partnership with the museum, and we've talked about going forward with more, but we haven't quite decided who or when yet. We have a couple ideas. I'm not quite at the point, and we're not quite at the point where we're going to actively pursue people, mainly because I don't want a flood of suggestions that I don't end up following up with and people be disappointed.
Sure. That's great. So if somebody is listening to the podcast and they want to check out these stories, what's the best way to get to them again?
You can go to, there's a couple ways. You can go to the 970 West Digital Collection. I believe that's under Books and More. Is that right? And then you can also go just directly to the catalog and search local digital archive, and you'll get tons of information for just about anything you search.
And also, if you want to keep up with a weekly type of thing, Noel and Michelle do a local History Thursday blog.
Yeah, we alternate. Yeah.
So those have some really good stories. I think the last one that was done was on the air show.
Yeah. Yeah.
The history of the air show.
Yeah. Michelle did that one. It was good.
Those are very cool. They're on our website. You can either go to blogs or you can scroll down to the bottom of the homepage and they are on there.
Yep.
Great. Noel, thank you so much for coming in today. I appreciate it.
Thank you both very much.
This podcast is recorded at the 970 West Studio at the Central Library in downtown Grand Junction. Subscribe to the podcast and follow us on social media for library updates. For more information about the library, visit mesacountylibraries.org.